Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. Tim Priester here from Irish Illustrated with Tim O'Malley. A surprise guest today, Pete Sampson. We didn't think he would be joining us today. He normally is with us. He wasn't last week, but he is joining us from a mobile site where
it's summer camp season, and I don't mean Notre Dame recruiting camps.
He's set up.
Any parent can relate to what I just said.
He's set up in his office with four doors and in his vehicle is what I mean. But anyway, a lot happened at the end of last week when it was announced that Jack Swarbrick would be departing after 15 years as Notre Dame's vice president and director of athletics. That will happen early in 2024. He will be replaced by Notre Dame 1993 graduate Pete Bavakwa, who I don't know. Pete, have you ever crossed paths with him, Tim?
I have not. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people about him.
I've never
crossed paths with him.
Yeah. Obviously highly respected within the business. We'll talk about as a background as an attorney, which I think more and more is becoming very
important. Yes. It's more mandatory than relevant almost.
Yeah, Notre Dame has now hired two in a row. And we'll get into that a little bit more when we get into questions in the second segment. And frankly, we didn't get a lot of football related questions today. We didn't get any questions about Micah Shrewsbury, and I spent an hour with him late last week as well. So we'll get into all of that. But I just wanted to, I've written two stories. There's two more to come. One of them will be today and one of them will be on Tuesday. But let's just start with you guys. Just your thoughts on the decision, the announcement, the replacement, et cetera.
I concur that it's from the outside looking in, it's hard to argue with anything in terms of Bavakwa replacing him. He checks every single box. It's great to hear about his accomplishments coming in. And I enjoyed the, reading Jack Swarbrick's comments on it, that is, of course, what I expected to say when we go through your four-part article on Swarbrick, Tim. I'm not surprised by anything he said about Bavakwa. Obviously, he was going to completely endorse that. And it's also great that there's that six-month succession in place. That's cool. Yeah. I think that's pretty important for this job as well.
The box he doesn't check is experience as an athletic director.
But yeah.
This is a guy that has been involved in most of NBC's negotiations, NBC Sports, that is, and he seems pretty well equipped. Pete, your thoughts?
I mean, I thought it was very professionally done in terms of the transition. It's kind of on brand with how Notre Dame has done its sort of coaching turnovers in some ways, where you kind of have your successor before the first person steps down. To get somebody who's deep inside of media, I think is sort of the next essential resume line on top of you have a law degree. So that's very smart. And talking to people about Bavakwa, very impressed, personable guy. I'll be interested to sort of see how he is different from Swarbrick in terms of personality and sort of approach to things. But I think it was a smart move. And if it's in some ways, I feel like they hired somebody in-house without hiring somebody in-house, because NBC is essentially a partner with Notre Dame as much as it's a media corporation.
Pete, when you mentioned it's on brand with how Notre Dame has done it, it was about as seamless as it gets, right? I think we might have a question on this. I'm stepping over, but there was barely a leak. There was almost nothing when we found out it was happening. That is a rarity also. And they really, I think that's a testament to them and to how they had done their due diligence. And they were actually in lockstep with who they wanted as well. There was no like, someone else was spoken to about this. Somebody else had this. I, very rarely is it that seamless nowadays with social media. And that was an immediate transition over a 6-month period. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, Swarbrick has many legacies. One of them is the fact that nothing really leaks in the media. You know, it's like, when you think of their coaching hires, it's pretty locked up. He's done a pretty nice job of that. Much to our chagrin sometimes, but, gotta give credit where some credit is due.
Well, and interestingly enough, and when information does leak, it frequently comes from his office because that means it's time to reveal this. And I think Jack Swarbrick has been at the forefront of some of that stuff has come out. But I do want to say this, and we barely had any football questions. It's mostly about Swarbrick and AD and the other thing and the other aspects involved here. But I do want to say this, that when I brought up to him, and this is one of the segments of the interview that hasn't been published yet, when I brought up to him about the Goog, and we talked extensively about the Goog, and that'll be a standalone story, I said, I asked whether Bavakwa's personality / fundraising capabilities will be of assistance in trying to get the Goog done, and he wholeheartedly agreed with that. The guy's a negotiator. He's a big personality when it comes to connecting with people. And so for those that are pushing for the Goog, I think that Pete Bavakwa is exactly what they need to get that accomplished. And we'll deal more with that in segment two,
part three.
Well, that'll ultimately be part four. I hate to, you know, stretch all this out, but there's so much to cover. I want it all to, you know, kind of stand alone with each topic. You know, I mean, I went into this, I was supposed to have the interview with them last Friday. Then it was postponed. I didn't know the reason behind that. Ultimately, the reason was that they didn't think the announcement from NBC was going to quite come yet. And so they didn't want to do the interview until that happened. Not just because it was me, but just, I know he had some other interviews as well. So ultimately we ended up having that interview and we covered a lot of ground. I had so much ground to cover with him anyway. And then came the news of
Bavakwa. I was thinking that, but obviously it would have been a lot worse if you covered all that ground on Friday and the announcement was today. Yeah. So I think that's good that they put it back on Friday for you is good.
I had 45 minutes and I finished it in 44 minutes and 45 seconds. it was rapid fire questions and we got it accomplished and he cooperated great. It worked out really well, but so we'll get onto that a little bit more, quite a bit more in the second segment. But Notre Dame, I did want to jump into recruiting because there were several key recruits on campus, none more key than Elijah Rushing, the properly named rush end, defensive end out of Arizona, who visited Notre Dame. We heard a bunch of mixed results via Tom Loy and Kevin Sinclair. Some said he was, you know, pretty low key, didn't talk a whole lot. You know, I think the visit went well for Notre Dame. They feel good about it, but he has a trip to Oregon this weekend, and we know what happens when highly recruited guys that like Notre Dame visit Oregon, the things that can happen there. Then he will conclude the month with a trip to Tennessee. He has previously visited Arizona from his home state in UCLA. His host this past weekend was Niuafe Tuialamaka. And he commented to 24/7 Sports' Tom Loy that Marcus Freeman, when asked about NIL, Elijah referenced or referred them to, a conversation between Marcus Freeman and his father. And Elijah himself was not involved there, but he's big. I don't know. You can put everything in the same category, but man, that's a dude that comes in and plays right away.
Yeah. It's in terms of the other schools involved, unless A&M and Miami jumped in there, I'm not sure I could think of a worse group of schools for Notre Dame. Because it's very heavy NIL group. I mean, Tennessee is at the top of that game. Oregon is way up there. And UCLA is ultimately where Dante Moore ended up. So It's I think it would have to get to a point where Elijah Rushing would have to say, like, the differences of Notre Dame would have to be so compelling, and they could be, that he was like, I'm going to bet on the myself long term. And that's tough for to ask a 17-year-old to do. But you are spot on that he would come in and he would play and he would make an impact on Notre Dame right away.
I don't disagree with anything either of you said, except in addition to him wanting to choose hard and choose different and bet on himself in the future, I think there would have to be another collective in addition to fund to help that happen.
And I would expect that to happen. That's what I was right. going to say. I expect
that to happen too. I'm saying I think that happens.
Notre Dame will offer a healthy and ideal, but healthy is relative. As Pete said, when you talk about Oregon, you talk about Tennessee, you talk about UCLA, I think the visit to Arizona is probably a formality because he's from Arizona. But those are heavyweights, and we'll see how Notre Dame does there. Yes, Tim.
For people listening, if they didn't read it, because I mean, amid all the compliments and all the nice things that Rushing said and had to say, when Tom Loy writes, I haven't spoken with a single source that believes Notre Dame will eventually be the landing spot for the 6'6", 235 pounder. That's about as blunt of a report as you're going to get in recruiting.
Yeah, that's tough. The other guy I want to mention, there were a couple guys in town, Bradley Shaw, the linebacker from Alabama, Oliver Miles, the three-star safety that's looking at Texas Tech as well. I want to mention Carter Nelson. I went to look a little bit of film of him. I saw eight on eight football. Which
fun to look at film of 8-on-8 football. It just might not tell you as much, right?
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, he's in the top 150 or top 120. I mean, he's a legitimate big time player. Georgia is probably going to get involved. Nebraska is, because he is from Nebraska. We'll see what happens there. But I want to mention those two, especially Elijah Rushing, because he's big time. And again, like, I don't like the expression plug and play. I use plug and play with Elijah Rushing. I mean, the guy is incredibly appropriately named with the last name of Rushing. I wanted to.
Yeah. It's hard to find. I was going to say, like, with a tight end, I was talking to a colleague of mine in Nebraska, so he's kind of familiar with the recruiting process there. And like, I think people in Nebraska think that he is severely underrated, like if this is potentially a top 50 player in the country, despite the 8-on-8 background. Like, he is somebody that you might not look at him and think like this is the next Michael Mayer, but like people think very, very highly of him there.
Probably not as tall as Mayer. I mean, doesn't quite have those proportions, but really, really good football player. I just want to wrap up. Bear with me as I pontificate here a little bit, but I did have a one-on-one with Micah Shrewsbury. I'm going to say Micah Freeman and Marcus Shrewsbury, I'm sure, at some point along the way here. But just a couple observations and some of the things he said. You know, and I told Tim,
coming out of the interview, you're going to tell this story the full way.
I wasn't quite, because he is so humble and understated at times, that I wasn't quite sure about how I felt with my first one-on-one meeting with him. I liked him. He obviously impressed, but I didn't know exactly how I felt after that interview. Well, a lot of times, and this happens with all of us, when you're in an interview, you get kind of lost in the interview and you're thinking about your next question. You're trying to listen to what he's saying and you're trying to make sure that you cover everything that you have on your sheet in front of you. And I don't think that I fully grasped the conversation with him, but humble, but extremely confident in his abilities, which is a rare kind of combination. But I think that that's an accurate depiction of who he is. Some of the things he said to me: if players don't fit your system, then your system doesn't work. You have to adapt and adjust to who you have. Now, strong, long, athletic, versatile, and skilled. He said that on a couple of occasions. And if you saw Penn State play, I mean, not a great team. They finished 10th in the conference, had a great run postseason, but strong, long, athletic, versatile, and skilled is the team that he put on the court. And that's what he intends to do. If you look at the roster they have now, they have 10 guys. It may stay at 10 because he doesn't believe in short-term fixes. He doesn't want to add a guy now. He even made a comment. I tell my coaches, don't find me a guy that can win us one more game next year. I'd rather play the young guys. And he has to play young. He's going to have to play young at guard. And if he does add anyone else to that 10-man roster, it will be an older guard, maybe two older guards. He didn't say that, but I would speculate that. He says he's a defensive guy first. He said, if you don't need a sub, you're not playing hard enough. It was various phrases like this. And as you really start to listen to him, you know, you really like what he has to say. The NBA influence. I asked him if he had a decided schematic advantage. I don't think that he was familiar with that expression. I mentioned it had been a Charlie Weiss comment, but
it's for the best.
Yeah, he did comment about.
Wasn't he at IUSB when that was said? He should remember that.
I don't know, but you know, just the not only the people that he interacted with, whether it was Brad Stevens or Matt Painter, mm-hmm. but the guys that he competed against in the NBA. They shoot a lot of three pointers, but he said, you know, our percentage is high because we take efficient three pointers. He's in it for the long haul. You know, I didn't ask him about Notre Dame potentially being a stepping stone, but he indicated that this is for the long haul, and that's a big reason why he doesn't want to just add players that might hurt the chemistry or might just be kind of like a 1 year, you know, fill in just to have enough players on the roster. So
I think a 1 year, if you remove the word fill in, is important though. I'd like a 1 year person that will help, that aids the chemistry and can help the team win four more games. That you need. That is important.
Exactly. And the one thing that people may not like is that he talks about fit over talent. Now, again, understand that he views talent as strong, long, athletic, versatile, and skilled, and he fully intends to have a roster of players like that.
Right, right.
So it's not like, oh, we're just going to pick fit and not tend to the talent part of it. We're going to gather talent. And clearly, the 10 guys that he has now are longer and more athletic than what they've been playing with. So it's a step in that right in that direction. But he is not going to do anything in 1 year to negatively impact what he wants to do over the long haul.
Yeah, I think so. The long haul thing is, like, my colleague Brian Hamilton sat down with him and he was sort of struck by, like, Micah Shrewsbury knows the scale of the task at hand. Like, I think if he was on this podcast and we were in the conversation about how many years to make the NCAA tournament, he would probably lean towards more like two or three opposed to one or two. Like, this is a big, challenging job, and probably it's not one that he shows up to work every day and be like, awesome, we're crushing it today. Like, the scale of the job I think is not lost on him in terms of what he's trying to build here, and that it may take some time to get there.
Yeah, it will. I met Grady Eifert. I met a couple of the guys, some of the behind the scene guys as well, but you mentioned Brian Hamilton. That's somebody I'm going to be giving a call, Pete, just to get filled in a little bit more on his insight into Micah Shrewsbury. Thanks for indulging me here. We'll be back segment two, Burning Up the Boards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Segment two of Burning Up the Boards, our first question actually addresses something I stepped over in segment one. Go Fight Win, Go Irish asks, when did you first hear Jack might be stepping down? Usually a rumor would leak out before he announced this, but this seemed to be a well-kept secret.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I first engaged in conversation with Jack Swarbrick in, you know, before the pandemic about...
Right.
An exit strategy. He's now 69 years old, so he would have been 66 at that time. And, you know, I think he was, I mean, you're looking for an ideal time when the college athletics landscape isn't so scrambled and so many things are going on. Then COVID hits. And then, you know, you're dealing with national social unrest, a multitude of things that then includes NIL and transfer portal. And like he's been for Notre Dame, from Notre Dame's perspective, he's been a godsend because he's been equipped to handle all of these seismic changes in intercollegiate athletics. So I think there was always a plan to, hey, when things loosen up, I'm going to step down. So my point is, you know, now that it's happening, because I felt like, and this proved true in my conversation with him, and the NBC deal and the apparel deal, not in that order, actually the other way around, the apparel deal and NBC deal, those were kind of the last things on his desk. Now, the Goog is still a priority, but that's not something that is going
I've not heard of that. What is the Goog situation? People really haven't informed me. What's the issue with the Goog? Does there need to be an enhancement or something? Is that what is going on?
I'm a little reluctant to say too much before the story appears.
I'm just kidding with you. I know something should probably happen to the Goog, but I was trying to find this, you know, if anybody complains about it ever to you, like they do on occasion to me, there's a problem with the Goog. So
yeah,
it's just an amazing.
Well, I'll say this, you do think that there needs to be a renovation of the Goog, right? Because I've had some people are misquoted saying, well, he's been against it. So I said, you do agree that there needs to be a renovation of the Goog. And he said, well, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, we'll get into the timetable of it in the story that is expected to appear tomorrow on Irish Illustrated June
30th. To this question though, Tim, I think he would have already been gone if not for the pandemic.
I think there's a very, very good chance of that, but there was never a jumping off point. And if he did jump off, it would be at the expense of his alma mater, and he felt obligated to not do that. And the university wanted him to feel obligated not to do that. You know, he's a big time player in all of this. Not everybody agrees with that, but as we get into more of these questions, we'll answer that a little bit further. But now, I mean, we were all caught by, I think Pete, you were too, right? We didn't know it was going to be.
Yeah. It's just like, you knew what was going to happen either this summer or next summer, right? 100, like right. With 100% certainty. You just didn't know it was going to happen. What, Thursday of last week? That was a surprise, but it's like the exit strategy. There's like never a good time in college athletics. Is nothing is ever stable or predictable. There's always more stuff to do. Like, I mean, the NIL future of the sport is that, I mean, Notre Dame needs a solution for that, but like Swarbrick is not going to hang around that long to do it. I mean, that may be 5 years, 10 years down the road. So
no.
Yeah. Now I think if COVID did not happen, he probably would have retired 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, yeah,
stepped away from Notre Dame, I should say.
Priester, when you said you talked to him about it before COVID, I mean, that's 4 years ago. That was just the beginning of that was when like the big news was, oh, 4-game redshirt. No brainer. This is great for college athletics. Since you talked to him about this, they've had the open transfer rule, the transfer portal, the pandemic, and NIL. That's a little bit different than, hey, you get to play.
Yeah, Arnell, at the same time, I've talked to Swarbrick about this. It's like, do we really need to do the portal and NIL at the same time? Because it's like, it's just one pours gas on the other, and then it just turns into an existential mess for college football. So it, I think if he, maybe in an honest moment over like a well-aged whiskey, he'd be like, you know what? January of 2020, that's probably when I should have decided to hang it up.
I can't exactly pinpoint the exact time if that's exactly when I had the
conversation. It was pre-COVID. It was definitely pre-COVID.
One of my one-on-ones with him, I sat down and asked him like, how much longer do you want to do that? It might've been in the summer of 2019. And I was a little more open-ended at that point.
Right. You know, and I think he feels good about, this isn't one of my stories about the former governor of Massachusetts, Charlie Baker, sending to the head of the NCAA. I know there was a lot of commentary on the Irish Illustrated message board about Charlie Baker getting together with members of Congress and trying to get them to intervene. that's probably the only way NIL is going to be reeled in. The NCAA is not going to do it.
They can't do it on their own.
And so Charlie Baker is a good lead, really, really good, from what I know, a really, really good leader to step in with the NCAA, which, needless to say, was desperately in need of somebody to lead that organization, which basically just threw up its hands and said, we can't do anything. So to use an analogy, open borders in college athletics. And that's exactly what happened. Question from Dallas Irish 83. Last year, Notre Dame had three running back. We're going to mix it up a little bit with some football, but there weren't many questions. Dallas 83, Irish 83 asked, last year, Notre Dame had three running backs get 100 or more carries. Will it have that many get 100 or more carries this year? If so, other than Audric Estime, who would the other two players be? And separately, will Estime exceed 200 carries?
I will say no vehemently.
On the 200 carry? Wait, oh, no, on the...
Well, Audric Estime, I think, will approach 200 carries, but they'll pass enough where he doesn't have to. But like Kyren Williams was at 200 carries in 2021, and he was at 211 in 2020. Those are extreme. 2020 is an extreme running year. They played 12 games, so one fewer. 2019, I know nobody got to 150, and only one running back got to 100. Ian Book used to run. So actually, Ian Book took up some carries, which won't exist as much for Hartman, but there will be only one with over 100. I'm almost positive, and I think the other guys will hit that 75 range. And Audric Estime will be pushing 200. And it would have been much different with Logan Diggs.
Right. Yeah, I think without Logan Diggs, Audric Estime, I'm not saying he's a sure thing to go over 200, but if we were doing an over-under bet and you gave me a little bit of juice on it, I would bet the over on 199.5 carries for Audric Estime this year. Because it's also just like O'Malley made this point a couple of weeks ago. It's like kind of a smoke him if you got him situation with Audric Estime. He's not going to be here a whole lot longer, and you might as well get your 212 carries, 1,375 yards, 12 touchdown season out of him before he decides to take his talents elsewhere.
Yeah, the fact that Notre Dame had never had three guys with 100 carries in a year, it happened for the first time last year. So that alone, I would say, is very, very unlikely. But everything that you guys said there, I'm higher on Devin Ford than most. I think he could possibly be a 100 carry guy, but a lot of that depends on Darian Price and how healthy he is.
To put it in perspective, though, Notre Dame's last time they had two running backs, now this does not include Book or Kaiser as quarterbacks, and Wimbush, was 2015, where they had two running backs go over 100 yards, and that was because they got hurt. CJ Procise got hurt, which allowed Josh Adams would have basically gotten there, if not quite. He had 117 and he started two games, so he wouldn't have gotten there, but that's just not enough. There's not that many carries. It's remarkable they had three last year. I don't think I knew they had three last year. How do I not know that stat? But it's incredible. Like no one's even close. Even like Dexter Williams, he missed four games, so they had other guys running, and the highest guy behind Dexter was 83. And he missed four games.
Yeah.
So you had to give the ball to someone.
You know, it's pretty, I mean, you look back now, I mean, Kyren Williams, back-to-back years of 200 carries. That's, I mean, that is a beast, man. Good Lord.
Well, he went pro too. That's why you should go pro as a junior.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, Estime takes a pounding because he gives so much out. You know, it's good to be proactive as a running back, but still, even when you initiate it, you're initiating greater contact too.
I agree. I don't think it's a great thing that Estime gets 200. I'm just betting it.
No,
I think it'd be awesome if Devin Ford rushes 100 times or Jadarian Price and Ford go for 80 apiece.
Right. I'm going to say under just for the hell of it. A question from David Lopez 5, under as in 200 carries for us.
Yes. Yes.
In the modern age of college athletics, do you anticipate more schools hiring people who have not been career ADs to that position, or is Notre Dame's situation more unique?
I wouldn't say. Go ahead, Pete.
No, I was going to say, Notre Dame is more unique, if that is a phrase. But I think, you look at conference commissioners, Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10 hired a TV exec. That is good. That is more common now. I think Syracuse's AD came straight from ESPN. It makes sense because, I mean, of all the relationships the Notre Dame AD has to maintain, how many relationships would you guys say are more important than his relationship with Notre Dame's media partner? Like two?
Yeah,
the president and the chairman of the board of trustees? Like, yeah. It's a pretty small list. So I think the ability to maintain that relationship has become more and more and more important over time. And I think you see that in terms of how critical getting the right dollar figure from NBC, from Notre Dame, is going to be as it relates to Notre Dame's independence moving forward. So, yeah, I think that I think this is a trend, and Notre Dame sort of being a conference of one, as sometimes they're described as, like, it makes sense.
I think the big players can do what Notre Dame does if Texas would be next in that situation, where it's more important to have the Pete Bavakwa of Texas than it is to hire an experienced athletic director. And I think you'd see USC getting out of its own way, hiring athletic directors in the future too.
Yeah. Well, I think with Notre Dame, like, fundraising has not been a real, like, I think Jack Swarbrick probably intimated this to you, Tim, when you, like, fundraising, I would not describe as one of his strengths, right?
I agree with it, and I don't think he would disagree.
Okay. I think Pete Bavakwa fundraising will be one of his strengths.
Yes.
Like, I think he will maintain relationships in a way that, you know, Swarbrick just, that wasn't his MO. Like, people have different personalities, people have different strengths and weaknesses, and I think one of Bavakwa's strengths will be sort of that building relationship capital with people who can help fund athletics.
It's like having strengths and weaknesses when one coach just doesn't coach any defense. That's fine. You don't have any defense. You have different strengths and weaknesses. You're
totally agree with what you're saying there, Pete, as far as, you know, as far as Bavakwa and his fundraising, and Swarbrick is great at a lot of things. I don't necessarily think that that is one. And I don't think that he would disagree with that either. Now, I did ask him directly. I said, another lawyer as an AD, is that going to be the norm moving forward? And he recommends that, you know, certainly. Back when he was hired, the name that I was throwing out as a possible a successor to Kevin White was Rick Crist, who was a teammate of mine in Notre Dame. He's an attorney as well, and he was commissioner of the Mid-American Conference at one time. I caught a lot of grief because I was told that I was, you know, pandering to a friend of mine. Well, I didn't know Jack Swarbrick. I didn't know Jack Swarbrick was going to be as good at his job as he was. But my point being that Rick himself is a lawyer as well. So the last three that they strongly considered have been in that role. And I think that that's what we'll see moving forward.
Next question from Anon 5678015 at Scout. That's a lot. Elijah Rushing's dad is handling his NIL. Unlikely to end well. We have seen this movie?
Yeah, I think your point about nobody. Who did you quote? You're quoting Tom Loy as saying that
nobody at Notre Dame has said they expect him to land there. Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, I don't. Look, that is kind of a 1+1=2 question. I mean, just because it happened with Dante Moore doesn't mean it's going to happen with Elijah Rushing. But, you know, I think more pertinent is Oregon, Tennessee, UCLA, and their involvement in NIL. I don't think that it's a coincidence that those are three of the four schools that he's considering. Do you?
I do not. No. I mean, if you're considering one Pac-12 school in Los Angeles, it's obviously UCLA, right? Like, wait a minute.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it's a concern. We'll see what happens. We mentioned the two visits he has coming up in June, and we expect him to make a announcement in July, I believe, correct?
That's what he has said. Yes.
I think that's what he has said. Yes, exactly. Excuse me. Question from CMU Pence fan. Given that USC has had a revolving door of disastrous ADs, do you think some Notre Dame fans forget how good they have had it with Jack Swarbrick at the helm of the athletics department?
Yes, but two things can be true. You shouldn't have a revolving door of disastrous ADs if you're USC either. That's separate entity from Notre Dame having a good one and other people having competent ones or decent ones or not 12 of them in 5 years or whatever the USC had. It's just remarkable how poorly they did at hiring.
Well, when you're choosing former football players on a regular basis, you open yourself up to that.
Hey, we're not counting Pete Bock was a former football player in the same way that was. Yeah, I don't think we should. I do think Swarbrick probably taken for granted. It's like when I was writing sort of retrospective last week on Swarbrick's tenure here, I went back and dug up, I think it was the first time I had talked to him one-on-one. It was outside the old Jameson Inn, which I think is like Ivy Court now, right by campus.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the morning of the Connecticut game. So think about like how we view Notre Dame football today versus the morning of the Connecticut game when they ultimately lost in double overtime and Charlie Weiss got fired a week later. Like, Notre Dame football was a broken down program at that time. And we definitely take for granted the fact that we just expect they're going to win 9-10 games every year at a minimum. Like, back then it was, maybe they'll go 6-6 this year. That's so far away from where things were when Swarbrick took the job. And I think that part of him, more than anything to me, gets taken for granted.
There were 131 FBS teams last year. I think there's 132 this year. Of the 132 athletic programs, how many of you think would like Jack Swarbrick as their AD?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I mean, that's total speculation. I get that. But I can't believe that there are more than 10 or 15 of those institutions.
No way.
But they love their AD.
They love their current director as well. Yeah.
They have reason to love their AD. But you can't tell me that less than 85, 90% of all of college athletics would want Jack Swarbrick as their AD.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I don't want to sound hypocritical here, so I will say there's two things can be true, Pete, as well. You're absolutely right about the state of Notre Dame football when Jordan Todman and Andre Dixon are both running for 100 yards against you on senior day and Zach Frazier beats you. But most Notre Dame athletic directors should be able to guide Notre Dame's football program out of the depths they were in when they take over a job in a 4-year period.
Yeah, it is sort of like comparing it to USC's AD situation, right? Like, it's kind of a false floor, but
yeah.
I mean, Notre Dame had been sort of in the wilderness for like, what, 20 years at that point? So if it was that simple to guide the football program, somebody else would have done it.
15 years, 14 years, 14 years. Yeah. I mean, they were pretty, when Notre Dame was still pretty good at the end with Lou, but I get it. I know what you're saying. Yeah. It's just that I don't think his greatest accomplishment is being able to pull Notre Dame out of
It's the accomplishment that gets taken for granted most. His greatest accomplishment is Campus Crossroads. Right. And I'll even argue with Jack Swarbrick about it, but I think he said that. As much to Priester, like
FIM.
People say Campus Crossroads, but I say FIM. I say, no, that's crazy. It's Campus Crossroads, which houses FIM, by the way.
You know, I just an aside, then we'll move on from this. But and you guys didn't know Barry Alvarez. You're not old enough to know him, but he was at Notre Dame in 88, 89. He went to Wisconsin in 90. They went 1-10, I think it was. But when Notre Dame was competing for the national title in 93, Barry Alvarez won his first Rose Bowl. They went 10-1-1 at Wisconsin. They had a little bit of dip after there, but then they ended up winning back-to-back Rose Bowls. And I've had some people say, and I haven't verified this, but there were some things in Alvarez's past that, you know, I don't know. There weren't enough things in his past to be named the defensive coordinator in 88, 89. But what if they hire Barry Alvarez, a College Football Hall of Famer, as a coach, instead of Bob Davey?
Well, yeah, that's what all of us sane fans wanted when we were wandering around wondering what the heck was going on when they hired Bob Davey.
Yeah, I mean, and he had, you know, Alvarez had established himself as a Rose Bowl. Again, I think he was coming off back-to-back 8-5s.
But he also be the son coming home. He was a favorite son coming home to Notre Dame as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, exactly. And Wisconsin was horrible before he took over. So, in fact, when Barry Alvarez said to Lou Holtz, hey, I'm going to take the Wisconsin job, Holtz's response was, oh, come on now, we can do better than that. because Wisconsin was so bad. But Lou Holtz told me that he recommended Barry Alvarez to Notre Dame, and they went with Bob Davey. I don't know all the details of backgrounds and stuff, but as a guy, as a defensive coach, right, who would have been a run first physical power attack, I think it would have worked quite well after Lou Holtz. Question from Coach Aguiar. What would the new AD have to accomplish with the TV and apparel deals to win the fans' acceptance? If I could, if I could insert something before you.
Yeah, please.
Well, I don't, Bavakwa, I mean, he is going to be at Notre Dame in July, but these are essentially Jack Swarbrick decisions here as he wraps up. Those are the last two things.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
On his plate. So, you know, maybe it is what would Jack Swarbrick have to accomplish with the TV and apparel deals?
Well, let's take them one at a time. What do you guys think about TV? What is the number, what that would make fans accept, win the fans' acceptance for a TV deal?
I mean, the problem is there that Notre Dame does not, we don't know how much they're making off of it. It's purely a financial matter to me. Yeah. You have to make enough money that independence is still financially viable. And so that's, I don't think whether it's CBS or NBC or ESPN, like, I don't think Fox really makes any sense with Notre Dame, just sort of the vibe there. But I think sticking with NBC and getting NBC to come way up, which I believe that they will, talking to some people who are a little plugged in there. NBC wants Notre Dame. Notre Dame wants NBC. So I think that's purely a financial play. Their apparel deal, I get it. If they stick with Under Armour, it's going to get panned. I just think that their apparel deal and the ramifications of it in 2014 or in 2023, 24, where there's the transfer portal and NIL, like, it just doesn't, it just close. I don't think it makes the brand, I don't think has the impact that maybe it did 10 years ago when Notre Dame signed with Under Armour in terms of moving the needle.
You know, I think Notre Dame's ready for Nike. Nike's certainly ready for them. But I don't know that. I don't know that for a fact. As it relates to the TV deal, it comes down to, can Notre Dame make as much as all the teams in the Big Ten? I doubt. Twice what they're making now?
Oh yeah, I think twice. Yes. Twice would be almost, my answer, if they doubled their NBC deal, I think they would almost be a little disappointed.
What they
want? I think Notre Dame can do better than double.
Well, the next step would be triple, because I can't swear that I know the numbers, but the numbers that have been floated by me indicate more like triple.
Yeah, that's sort of the scuttle that I hear as well.
I agree with you that it's all financial and close, but to answer the question directly, what would he have to accomplish? I think they would have to leave NBC because people are sick of it. Even though whether they're right or wrong or not, I think that's what most fans would want. And it would have to be Nike to win fans' acceptance.
I don't think they're leaving NBC.
I don't think they're leaving NBC at all. No. But if to get the fans' acceptance, if Notre Dame went somewhere else after 32 years, the fan base would be happier.
I would agree.
They would. It would be such a stupid decision.
Right. I agree. But the fan base would definitely be happier if they left.
Stick with NBC, throw the fans a olive branch, and go to Nike. How about that? I think that would be a win.
I'm with you. They need Brady Quinn to announce all their home games and also sit in their living room and talk to them about fund individually.
while discounting everything in the Canvas bookstore 50%.
The Irish Illustrated Media can't get a conversation with Brady Quinn, although I'm about to try again. It is summer.
You got Swarbrick done. I mean, come on.
Yeah. If we can do that, right? Brady's always been good, but I think he's been a little bit reluctant to, do a one-on-one and get into all the specifics and details. Question from Peak Robots. What would the NCAA have to do to put the genie back in the bottle? That phrase I used in the NIL story yesterday. Assuming they would have to show college sports is not a business in order to establish players are not employees, what could that look like?
It's not that I disagree with Jack Swarbrick that it's unfortunate they're becoming employees, but I disagree. It can be stopped. I don't think the NCAA has to take Notre Dame's unique student athlete relationship into account when they're making this decision.
No, I don't. The genie's not going back in the bottle on this one. Because sports are a business. Like, sports are a huge, huge business. As we just talk about, the most important thing about Notre Dame's TV deal is doubling or tripling the revenue to like somewhere between $50 and $75 million. I mean, what kind of non-business is that?
Yeah, I wonder if we're like when in using it in the headline and in the story, I didn't mean that NIL was going to be eliminated.
The point I just firmly believe that people don't care about Notre Dame's unique student athlete relationship and Jack Swarbrick vehemently deciding not to have them designated as employees.
No, but I think, when we talked about genie and bottle, it means like reining it in and having some uniform NIL across the board. I'm not saying that will definitely happen, but we're not talking about the elimination of NIL. No, that's never going back, and hell, it shouldn't. It should not.
I just don't understand how you can get rid of acquisition fees because you don't have to be on the up and up about these things. You never had to be.
I don't know.
You cannot get rid of them.
You can't.
Charlie Baker sitting down with 5 senators and 4 congressmen. And I mean, I think that they believe they can make some inroads, and I guess I'm naive enough to think that they can make some inroads.
Oh, now, some inroads, but like you're never going to eliminate the acquisition fee that happened in the 80s.
And you can't eliminate like tampering because
all that stuff is just, I don't know. It's a flaw of what college sports is. That's not going away. We call the acquisition fee something different than we did 10 years ago when it was just like the bag man. If you get rid of the acquisition fees, you bring back the bag man. Like that's, I don't know. The employee relationship is that's to me where the government can probably help the NCAA out the most. NIL stuff is like, I think you can set up guardrails, but I don't think that's going to stop stuff from happening. That's happening.
Yeah. Cheating has been going on in college football since before I realized there was cheating going on. And I've been watching college football for a long time. So
yes.
I get that. There's always going to be, and even if Congress puts some stipulations into play, the efforts to cheat will still go on.
Yes.
And they will get away with.
And I don't understand.
Winning feels too good not to cheat.
Right. And tampering is important to win because you have to talk to your prospective quarterback, wide receiver, and defensive end before somebody else does. Yeah. You have to make contact with these players. Why would you not make contact with a player that you know is leaving until he officially announces he's leaving?
Yeah, but you shouldn't. Like, you know, when you're walking off the field after a game.
That's different.
An opponent's coach is talking to a Notre Dame player about, you know, coming to their, come on, man. Jeez.
But they do it in high school all the time. Come over here. Come on, change districts. Come play for us. Yeah. I mean, tampering is never, I can't stand when people are like, oh, I can't believe they contacted him before they had to be graduated. Are you kidding? Like, but it's been going on forever.
If Notre Dame didn't deal with Sam Hartman before his name was in the portal,
The Steve Angeli era would be upon you. Actually, be Buckeye.
Yeah. It's like, why were we all so in tune with Notre Dame's interest in Sam Hartman? Why do we think that is? Like,
that's exactly right. Notre Dame's trying to do it the right way. Swarbrick even mentioned it. We're in a bind. They start reaching out to us.
And if you're reaching out to you, I can't talk to you. It's not even close to business, as Pete said. It's the number one person you could hire in the world wants to come work for you. I can't talk to you until you just quit your job. It's ridiculous.
If you can get part of the genie back in a bottle, that's a win.
Yeah.
How's that?
Back in time and just make NIL.
Don't let that be the enemy of, there's no perfect solution for any of this, but you can still make it better than what it is right now, which is not good.
I think that's a good point. Kaiser Wilhelm asks, should we assume that the broad strokes of the NBC deal are already hashed out? There's no way Notre Dame would poach their inside man before the details were agreed to, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but I mean, look, I think
broad there's strokes, been maybe
broad strokes, probably. And look, I think that some Notre Dame fans are a little like sensitive to like, well, wait, the Big Ten's on now there. And like, does that make us less special or kickoff times, so on and so forth? Notre Dame loves the idea of the Big Ten being on NBC, and NBC loves the idea of Notre Dame and the Big Ten being on same day on Saturdays for them. So it's, that's like a positive for this. Like that makes Notre Dame more of a must keep for NBC than it, than a, well, we have the Big Ten now, now we don't need Notre Dame. That's not how they view it at all.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, Swarbrick feels that Notre Dame's negotiating stance is better. It's definitely better now that NBC is connected to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's Notre Dame. He said, yes, Big Ten games where you're promoting the Notre Dame game.
Mm-hmm. Right. All for that. Win.
Yep. Yeah, he's all for that. And it,
because well, more people are going to watch the Big Ten game than the horse racing before the Notre Dame game.
I know. Notre Dame's not leaving NBC. You're not going to bring in the head of NBC Sports.
They're not. My point on what would make people happy was that. Oh, I'm not thinking totally at agree. All they're leaving NBC. Totally I'm agree. Saying what would make people happy.
The discontent is because they don't like the broadcast, or they don't like the right. announcers just in general. And, I get that, but.
To Rico, he lives in Ann Arbor. Like that really chaps my butt. That's like Notre Dame fans. I've never been happy with the NBC announcing team.
To Rico's a, you know, the win-win situation that doesn't come up very often.
No.
Next question is Irish Fan 102. How much say did Swarbrick have in his successor?
Well, this has come up as if Jack Swarbrick should have no input whatsoever. This Jack Swarbrick. In Notre Dame's opinion, this hugely successful vice president and director of athletics, yes, they want his input on this. Again, he told me that's my decision. That's not my decision. There are other key people at Notre Dame involved, including Father Jenkins, who, again, there's a groundswell to get rid of Father Jenkins as well. What has he done wrong as president of Notre Dame? I guess I don't see it as well as other people.
We both remember one thing, but it was 11 years ago. We were pretty mad. We will self-report and we will put ourselves on probate. Give me a break. Stop talking about
with
that.
What he said. Well, yeah,
we'll put ourselves up. We'll vacate the wins ourselves. Don't do that. Don't do that.
That was, yes, that was panned by Irish Illustrated. Yes, yeah. Definitely. But, you know, I mean, look, you're going to, it's like the interview I do with Swarbrick. We touched upon numerous topics, but and it's like when he says something, in my mind, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, that's going to get a reaction. Oh, that's going to get a reaction.
Did he talk about Spindler or Bertrand at all? Did he bring up either one of those players?
We did not. Check this out. I never uttered the name in that interview because of what we had to cover. I never uttered the name Marcus Freeman.
Wow. No,
he brought up Marcus.
He brought up Marcus. Yeah, he brought up Marcus.
But
and you're like, let's move on to other things.
What do you think about Kaiser moving to the dime package? Yeah. Will Backer position? Because
I didn't bring, nor did I bring up Shrewsbury. I haven't had a one-on-one with him talk about his basketball hire either. But there were just too many other things to. Yes, Swarbrick had a role in picking the successor, but it wasn't him solely, and I'm sure he was a big influence. As he should be, because that's how he is revered in Notre Dame circles, the inner sanctum of Notre Dame.
Yeah, I don't think he got to just choose whoever he wanted. But as I said earlier, it's like it's almost like an in-house hire that's not. In some ways, it's an in-house hire, but better than an in-house hire. And like, I think it's an excellent choice, and that Swarbrick and Jenkins are familiar with.
Right. And if not them, who should be picking the AD at Notre Dame? What makes sense? Who
and then you're at like qualified? What Jack Brandon, the chair of the board of trustees, like that doesn't, you got to work for that with that person, but I think I would want somebody a little, you know, day to day involved in the university. And like the Jack Swarbrick, like this time between July 1st and what the first quarter of next year. So we could be talking about 9 months. Like, that's great. You want to be working with somebody that you want to work with for 9 months before the transition is official.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't think we can emphasize that enough. And
I thought it was huge.
The smooth transition. you know, I mean, he does not have AD experience, but this guy, this, you don't think this guy's going to adapt in a heartbeat? I mean, come on. He will, but that's 6 months or however long it will be is extremely important. The press release said he would be there July 1. Jack Swarbrick told me middle of July. So I would imagine that middle of July is more updated, but that's hugely significant in the transition. And a question from Martin Evenflow. Looking back, what was Swarbrick's best decision that impacted the athletic department? And what was one thing you wish he would have done but didn't accomplish?
Well, I mean, the one thing we wish he would have done but will not ultimately accomplish would be a quicker update on the Goog. So it's 2019, right? When they had to get the Irish Athletics Complex finished because they absolutely needed it. I think the Goog could have come along in this span, in this 4 years, even though it lost a year and a half to COVID.
I think
the Goog could have been updated a long time ago.
Well, I mean, his response is we don't have the funding. The funding is not complete. Now you can see, I'm not going to say
that's impossible, but I'm saying I think that he could have made the funding be complete. I think that would be it's also one thing I wished he would have done but didn't accomplish, and I wish that would have happened because I have no ability to do it myself.
That I agree with, and I wouldn't have had to spend, you know, 15 or 45 minutes on the Goog the other day, but it was necessary. And hey, look, that's what our constituency wants to know about, and so I spent more time on that than anything else, and so that will be addressed in a story. Pete?
I would agree with O'Malley. I'm trying to think of something different in terms of like the facilities and upgrading that. And it's like, I just want to be like, Notre Dame's facilities are not bad. Like that's not true, but they definitely are not sort of fitting with where college football is in 2023. And Swarbrick has admitted this, like when the Goog was built, it was not done with like analysts and senior offensive interns and everyone needing an office. Like they've outgrown it. And I think, you know, some of that is just square footage. Some of that is like university culture where, you know, you don't want the players sequestered away 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. They like them interacting with the student body. So I can understand that part of it. Best decision that impacted the athletic department. I don't know what I would choose for that. This is not his best decision, but I'm saying it. I'm just noting it as an impactful and important one. And that was retaining Brian Kelly in 2016.
Oh,
because I think that sort of set the football program up into like the very consistent place that it is now. And I realize retaining Brian Kelly is not what people want to hear when like best decision, but like, it was a really good decision that
and a hard one
too. Different way.
It was actually a better decision than the hiring of him almost.
I think the hiring of him was such a no-brainer.
The decision
that,
to keep
that
him
really is a weird part of Swarbrick's legacy is like in 16 years he will have hired two football coaches and two basketball coaches total, and we don't know if three of them are like what their long-term track record is here.
With regard to the facilities, and he stressed this to me, it'll be in our story, you know, and you understand his reaction to it. I'm talking about the Goog, and he said, you know, there are three major structures in athletics. It's Notre Dame Stadium, Irish Athletic Center, and the Goog. Two of the three are state-of-the-art. I mean,
Irish Athletic Center is awesome. I just left there today, actually.
He said, NFL scouts come in and say, man, I wish we had this facility. So that's definitely state of the art. The stadium, good Lord. I mean, I realize there's a lot to the stadium that isn't football related, but the facility itself is awesome.
You get state of the art sunburn at that press box, man. State of the art sunburn.
There is that, since they switched sides so that the sun would shine in the
medium. Have you noticed how little that has affected us, though? That means there's no sun in South Bend after the first game of September, because we never have the sun in our... Remember the first time we're like, this is terrible.
Best thing about night games.
Yeah.
Can't see a thing.
So, you know, when we say facilities, we have to be clear in saying that the Goog is what is lacking. The other two are outstanding. Yes. Should Notre Dame have outstanding facilities in all phases? Yes, they should. But in this instance, because of various reasons, they haven't caught up in that one. As far as greatest accomplishments, I wouldn't have thought Brian Kelly, but I agree with you, Pete. I mean, that was a prudent,
It was a difficult decision,
but it was prudent. And I think that Jack Swarbrick, when you put together the list of things that he's accomplished, being prudent is right at the top of that list. But I still look at, well, you got to consider where Notre Dame was when the Big East was collapsing, and the deal that they got with the ACC, full participation except for football and hockey. Then when the pandemic hit, the relationship was so good that you were able to be a part of the ACC, a full member of the ACC in football when you desperately needed to be. So I would say ACC. And the other thing, and Pete, I know I've always given Jack Swarbrick more credit for this than you have, and I think most people, but his handling of the Notre Dame athletic department, along with Brian Kelly during the pandemic, I thought was absolutely exceptional. He promoted patience when the ACC wasn't being real patient, as the Big Ten, Pac-12 were delaying. He promoted patience, and it turned out with that patience, another couple extra weeks, things worked out. And Notre Dame, and this is where I give Brian Kelly credit, his team was so ready to play in 2020. I'm not sure very many programs were as ready to play in 2020 because of everything that we were dealing with the pandemic.
The unique thing about Swarbrick promoting patience is that's what regular people like us were saying about the Big Ten and everybody canceling. Like, why are you canceling your season now? That doesn't make any sense. It seemed like you could keep pushing it back. And it was such a common man decision that was made at such a higher level that we can't comprehend how it worked out. But it was simply, wait, no, you don't have to cancel your season right now. That doesn't make any sense for you to cancel things now. And the best part about going to the ACC and being accepted as Notre Dame for 1 year is how irrationally mad it made other programs fans. They really hated that.
And to clarify, they didn't totally cancel. They ended up playing half a dozen games.
But they canceled at one point.
But they canceled. Yeah.
When Notre Dame said we're going to play, like, Big Ten and Pac-12 had already said that we're not.
Yeah.
Tim, I agree with you. All those are, like, more impactful than retaining your football coach in 2016 after they went 4-8. I mentioned that more as, like, that's kind of an underrated, really important decision.
I agree. No, I totally agree with you. Yeah. Totally agree. Very underrated. And it kept continuity in an area where everybody on the outside places virtually zero value on continuity. But if you've ever been part of or in and around a program of this immensity, continuity is absolutely huge. And if you change coaches, you change everything. And they don't win 63 games in 6 years. I realize
Marcus Freeman, your head coach right now.
Right. And I realize that, I always come back to the number of wins over that time. And, it's like, oh, well, there weren't any big wins. Yes, there were big wins, not as many as you would like, but there were big wins in there. And all they did was beat the teams that they should beat. Well, Marcus Freeman wasn't able to do that last year. And you take for granted you're not in the playoffs if you don't beat the teams you should beat. And Brian Kelly did that. Should he have won more big games? Certainly. I mean, that's the expectation. But I think that's an insightful call on your part there, Pete. Last one from KevKev561. Changing the subject. Are there any other high profile commitments we can expect from before the start of the season? Expect? I don't know about expect.
I was going to say.
Is Bronte Johnson high profile enough for this question?
I have him on my list of four.
Okay.
Who are your other three? There you go. He is for me. That's the one I'm thinking.
Well, the other three are just based upon rating as I was going through the ratings. Justin Scott, Elijah Rushing, and Kirby Lambert.
I feel like Scott and Rushing are going to, well, I guess there could be a commitment that doesn't, this July has nothing to do with
one of them.
Commitment.
I mean, it would be a win if you could get one of them, right? A huge win.
Are you talking about Scott and Rushing?
Scott and Rushing, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, one would be a huge win. Because I'm not saying that I'm baking Bronte Johnson and Kirby Lambert into the class, but I kind of am.
one's from Indiana and the other one like couldn't be more Notre Dame if he tried. So I think those are guys that they'll close on. And then again, Notre Dame's sort of down to a position. How are we going to talk about this class on National Signing Day? Will probably come down to whether Justin Scott is in it or not.
I think I think they've got a decent chance of getting three of those four. I think they have a great chance of getting two of those four.
A much greater chance of two of the four in the end, but I think that they could get three of the four too as well.
Yeah. Well, hey, very athletic department focused here today. I would imagine it will change a little bit next week when we get back together, and that will be on it'll be on Tuesday. Sorry, our schedules are kind of popping around here a little bit, but that will be on Tuesday, June 20th, right, Tim? Am I getting that right?
That's absolutely right.
We have an interview with Marcus Freeman that day too. We're going to have to.
It might be on Wednesday.
What, the interview or the podcast? No,
Marcus Freeman interview during our podcast time.
I have a haircut on Wednesday, man. We can't change it. That's what I'm looking at right now. No, we'll do it. It'll be Tuesday, June 20th. We'll likely record a little bit later than normal. O'Malley and I will have an audience with Marcus Freeman. At least that's the way it's scheduled right now. And until then,
Charlie got a picture with Marcus Freeman today.
Have you not, Tim? Have you learned nothing about teasing future interviews on this podcast?
Yeah, I was going to say this is a problem. We will talk to Marcus Freeman right before the Navy game. Now this is great.
I was born a name dropper. I can't help myself. we'll be back next week on Tuesday, June 20th. Thank you for joining us. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider.
Looking for a perfect afternoon getaway outside of Dublin City? Explore Dunleary and many other places with the Do Dublin Freedom Card. Get a 72-hour pass for public transport services including bus, Dart, train and the tram line known as the Lewis. Plus, you'll receive a 48-hour ticket for Dublin's best hop-on, hop-off city tour. Book your Freedom Card now at dodublin.ie/Irish Illustrated. And enjoy the freedom to explore.